Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the February 20th broadcast of Italian Tomatoes, and it is South Carolina primary night. Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Italian Tomatoes. I'm your host, Bob Curie. It is primary day in South Carolina. The networks have already declared Donald Trump the winner of the South Carolina primary, but they are just actually just counting the votes. There's only a few percent of the precincts in. Trump has, I'm looking at Politico has a running count up. With 7.5% of the precincts in, Trump is leading with 34%. He is projected to be the winner. Of course, the number two spot is almost as important this night as number one, and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio are were running pretty close to each other. Oh, now it's up to almost 13% in. Rubio, Trump has 33%, Rubio 22%, Ted Cruz almost 21%. And then trailing behind John Kasich at 9%, Jeb at 9%, and Ben Carson at 6%. And I suspect this is Carson's last stance. The chat is open if you wish to participate in the chat and to call into the show. The number is 646-478-0004. That's 646-478-0004. I don't have a very structured show planned for tonight. I'm going to head over to C-SPAN play the audio over the phone. And then as people call in or make comments in chat, I'll interrupt that and respond to it. So low structure night tonight. I hope everybody is, how would you put it, resigned? Well, I mean, if your guy won, obviously you're going to be happy. If your guy did well, you'll be happy. If your guy didn't do too well, I hope that you don't take it too badly. I mean, it's a very divisive primary season, and, you know, a lot of passions have been unleashed. And although it's not pleasant when you are in the midst of it, it is a necessary part of the political process. We have to get all of these candidates and their what they stand for aired, their conflicting positions, their conflicting personalities, their conflicting ambitions, their conflicting styles. It all has to come out. It all has to be aired in the public square, and then hopefully we will emerge with the candidate that can best represent the issues, the principles of the Republican Party and the conservative movement. And we'll also talk a little bit about the Democrats as the opportunity presents itself. But let's head over to C-SPAN. They are at Marco Rubio headquarters, so let's see what they're doing there.
We're also at Ben Carson headquarters. Ben Carson is in Greenville. This is Jeb Bush headquarters in Columbia, South Carolina, and the Ben Carson headquarters in Greenville, South Carolina. The question is whether or not Jeb Bush will stay in this race in advance of the primaries on March 1st. I want to share with you a tweet from Dan Merica of CNN saying that the Clinton press plane is leaving Las Vegas. She was supposed to leave several hours ago, so her event in Houston, Texas, most notably, will be several hours later than initially scheduled. We did hear from Secretary Clinton in Las Vegas a speech that originally was scheduled to be delivered by her husband, but since she won the Nevada caucuses, she stuck around and spoke to supporters there. Damien is joining us from Vallejo, California, with Charlie Matizian, who's joining us from the Political Newsroom in Northern Virginia. Damien, good evening.
Good evening. Yes, I'm very disappointed in the Democrats that they chose political expediency over integrity. I mean, Clinton is... ...been so back and forth and everything, and the bankruptcy bill, which she went against it when she was... when Clinton was president, and then as senator, she voted for it, and other things that just show that her core is one of making a political deal, where Sanders represents a lifelong pursuit of civil justice. And it just seems extraordinary to me that Democrats would go down the low road. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. We'll get a response.
Not that extraordinary to me.
I think the caller gets it, you know, sort of the heart of Bernie Sanders' appeal. Oftentimes people... overlook the fact that his political brand and what it represents, and people and oftentimes pundits and reporters too, they focus on his support with millennial voters, young voters, but it's much broader than that. Obviously his message has a great deal of appeal to young voters, but it has appeal across the spectrum because, for the very reasons that the caller talked about. It is an uncompromising message. It is a clear, focused message. And when you look at his history over the years, he's somebody who has been something of an iconoclast and is somebody who has always gone his own way and always taken a different route, I think, than many of his colleagues. And, you know, a perfect example is he wasn't even a Democrat. You know, he was an independent, and he sort of proudly identifies himself as a democratic socialist, which, you know, for many years in American politics was, you know, would have been like touching the third rail. You never would have admitted something like that. But that is his style, and that is his brand, and it's really connected with a lot of voters.
Governor Kasich pointing out that he's hitting four states in 4 days. He's in Virginia, Georgia, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Tonight he is in Massachusetts. So with him coming in right now fourth in the South Carolina primary, where does he go from here?
Well, it's still a very uphill slog for John Kasich. You know, when you look at his ideological profile in a party that has moved to the left, I'm sorry, to the right, you know, it's hard to see what lane he's in. Maybe he ultimately ends up as the establishment lane candidate, but it's still tough going forward, in part because he has alienated some segments of his party that aren't comfortable with some of his stands, or maybe stylistically he's at odds with. I think for him, part of the challenge is going to be raising the money to stay in it until the middle of March, because first of all, keep in mind that after we get through South Carolina today and the Nevada caucuses next week, then the next big hurdle for the candidates on the Republican side is Super Tuesday, and that road goes through the South. We've got about a dozen states that are going to be voting, most of them in the South, and the reality is a Midwestern governor like John Kasich, with his profile and some of his issue stands, is not necessarily a great fit in the South. You know, maybe his message catches on, and we'll see going forward. So if that's the case, and it's hard for him to get traction, to have the resources to compete across a landscape that suddenly isn't one state, but it's 12 states, the challenge for him, though, is to get through until the middle of March when Ohio votes. And that is a very big state and a big hall of delegates that will be available to him in his home state. And the question is, you know, that's almost a month away or something just short of that, and that's tough. So it's still even fourth place tonight. How far does it get him? It's unclear.
Manu Raju, who is following CNN, saying Senator Tim Scott telling CNN that Jeb will have to make a decision on whether to continue, however, stops short of telling him to drop out. Let's hear from James, Martinsburg, West Virginia. Fine, good evening.
How are you doing, sir?
Fine, thank you.
to discuss about the veterans as far as the things that took place in reference to the hiding mails and taking folders. In Martinsburg, West Virginia, in 2013, I'm going to make this quick. There was an article in the paper, and I'm going to quote this. It stated that all black people were stupid, dumb, and ignorant, that they're going to take all the jobs from the black people, give them to the white people, and give some of the black people some of the jobs. My daughter read that, and it offended me. And as a veteran coming home, I was wondering, what's going on in America? I hope that Hillary Clinton do real well. I respect all other candidates. But the lady that made that statement in the paper associated herself with the Tea Party. We got more than just voting coming in this election. It's about self-pride and dignity. I'm a soldier, and a lot of soldiers, 22 of them dying a day.
James, thanks for the call. Charlie Matisian.
Well, one of the things that I think has been a very productive issue, or at least it's been a productive discussion because it's finally out there in the open, is we've had a pretty fulsome and vigorous debate over veterans issues this time. We typically haven't seen that in recent years, and you hear a lot of politicians sort of express their support for veterans, but not really in that great detail, certainly not on the presidential stage. And what you've seen from Donald Trump, at least, is a constant laser focus, even if there's maybe a lack of specificity or detail. He's raised the issue in a way that other candidates have had to follow and talk about that, and hopefully what that means going forward is that you're going to have a presidential campaign that focuses more on the needs of veterans and at least certainly in a way that's elevated over past cycles.
We talked to Michelle Rindels of the Associated Press in the last hour, and she sent an interesting tweet about the Nevada caucuses, Charlie Matisse, and she says that according to the interest polls, older women turned out for Hillary Clinton, and two-thirds of the Nevada caucus goers were at least 45 years of age.
Huh. The entrance polls are pretty fascinating. They came out today in a couple of different waves. The way they usually do is you'll see a wave of a couple of hundred, and then it will be filled in all through the day when you have entrance polls like that. And the numbers change each time depending on the kinds of people that went to the polls and responded to these entrance polls. I have to say I'm a little skeptical about some of the results, and I suspect that over the coming days you'll see that, you know, for various reasons, maybe some of those numbers are not exactly on the mark or might have to be tweaked. Having said that, there's a lot in those entrance polls that for Hillary Clinton to be glad about, numbers like the ones you cited, and then there are some that she needs to be worried about. Clearly, her support among African Americans, that's something that is very promising. The entrance polls also showed, though, that Bernie Sanders won among Latino voters. You know, I think there's a lot of questions about whether that was true and about the accuracy of that. We saw that Bernie Sanders also ran extremely well among young voters, which seems to be in line with what we've seen in the past with Bernie Sanders. So I think we're going to hear a lot of talk about the entrance polls in the days going forward. And it's also possible that we might have a discussion about, you know, how close to the mark they were in Nevada.
And Dylan Byers with this tweet, David Axelrod on Jeb Bush, quoting David Axelrod, "I don't think this is a tough conversation. I think this is a sad conversation. This race is done." Let's hear from Paul in Erie, Pennsylvania, Republican line. Good evening.
Good evening, Skippy. It's a shame that some of the candidates have to use such lousy or politically incorrect language, but I'm in the negotiations, and there's a lot of that happens at that time, and it's usually done with and forgot about when it's over. And I look at this country now with the infrastructure going apart, with the conditions in Flint, Michigan, with Detroit falling apart, with the problems we have with health care and how to take care of all the immigrants. And it's becoming more like a junkyard, not a nice place. It looks a little messy. And what we need is not a poodle to help protect us. We need a good junkyard dog, and I think that's what Donald Trump is, and I hope we elect him so he can help us out.
Paul, thank you for the call. A lot of support for Donald Trump this evening, Charlie Matisian.
Yeah, there sure is, and I think it really reflects that he has connected. He struck a chord with his message, in part because it's so unique. We really haven't had a politician who has been so unvarnished and stylistically so different than everyone else. And I think it reflects, you know, some change, some evolutionary changes in the Republican Party and the growth of a populist wing there. But also, it shows the resonance of the immigration message, particularly on the right. And Donald Trump has really tapped into that. He's tapped into a lot of strains in among American voters, and the common denominator, I think, of a lot of those strains is anger and frustration with the direction that the country is going on a number of different fronts, and a desire not just to make a departure, not just to have a different kind of candidate, but to make it a clean break from the kinds of candidates we've elected to office in the past.
Donald Trump with 34% of the vote now in, and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio duking it out for the second place, both at about 22%. I want to give you a little bit of the flavor of what it's like at these campaign headquarters, because we're going to take you to Columbia, South Carolina, at Marco Rubio headquarters, and you'll see the Fox News channel in the monitors, and every time they go to the crowd shot, you'll see the crowd cheering. In fact, one person tweeting from Cynthia Roldan that the headquarter crowd cheering in response to everything Fox News is showing and still waiting for the results to see if they came in second in the South Carolina primary. But this is a live picture from Columbia as we listen to Sean in the Indianapolis Independent Line. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was calling to express my dismay at the amount of influence exerted by super PACs in this election and every election since Citizens United. I think it's important to have that decision overturned, and that's done by the Supreme Court. And I think that C-SPAN would do well to cover more deeply the various Senate races as they develop, because it looks like it's the Senate and not the president that's going to decide the makeup of the court. And I also wanted to say, I just don't see a world where the scared white people who are lining up behind Donald Trump vote for a person named Cruz or Rubio, even though they're the ones in the party with true conservative Republican bona fides. And I think that's going to lead the Democrats to a win no matter how it shakes out. I just hope the court can follow them in the down ticket races.
Sean, thanks for the call. Charlie Mathesian.
I think the callers will be happy to know we're going to have a pretty vigorous discussion about Citizens United as we go forward, particularly as it relates to the Supreme Court nomination for the vacancy caused by the death of Justice Scalia. And you've seen that debate already begin to bubble up on the Democratic side, as Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton have both indicated that it's almost a litmus test issue for anyone that they would choose as a possible Supreme Court nominee. But I think we're going to get a full airing of that issue, in particular because it's so central to Bernie Sanders' core message of economic injustice and the role of Wall Street and the role of big money in American politics.
Let me conclude with two final points, because I know you have a busy night ahead of you, Charlie Mathesian, but from super PACs to superdelegates, a couple of editorials about the superdelegate roles for the Democrats, what this means for Hillary Clinton, and some Bernie Sanders supporters saying it's foul play.
Personally, I think the superdelegate issue is one. If this campaign goes on, if Bernie Sanders can recover from this, get some traction, make some headway on Super Tuesday on March 1st, I think this superdelegate issue is going to become a very big issue that people are going to hear a lot about. It's really going to detonate in the party, because the superdelegate issue, for people who don't know, and as you know, Steve, it's just essentially superdelegates are party leaders. They're elected members of Congress, governors, folks like that, who count as votes, but it is at its core a very undemocratic practice built in, and in many ways it's an anachronism. It's a vestige of a system decades ago. It doesn't exist on the Republican side. It exists on the Democratic side. But if Bernie Sanders were to move forward and get some traction, and as soon as his many of whom are new to the process find out that he's gaining delegates, but at the same time, even if he wins states, Hillary Clinton is continuing to grow her lead because she's picking up all these superdelegates, I think that would lead to a lot of frustration and maybe some reforms going forward. And I think this issue began to bubble up right after New Hampshire, when a lot of folks began to notice that in New Hampshire, Bernie Sanders won by a landslide, but he really didn't take a huge delegate advantage out of New Hampshire once you added in the superdelegates, because many of the superdelegates, many of the elected officials there supported Hillary Clinton. So I think this could be an issue worth watching going forward, But first, Bernie Sanders, I think, is going to have to win a couple of states where to get people to notice the delegate hunt in the first place.
And finally, this statement from the Kasich campaign saying that only four candidates have had top three finishes in any of the early primary or caucus states, and also a breakdown of the amount of money spent by Jeb Bush, $13 million, compared to only $800,000 by John Kasich. The Ohio governor saying it is now a four-person Republican race. Your thoughts?
Well, I think he accomplished all the things he wanted to do, which is, number one, take a throw an elbow at Jeb Bush, which is, you know, as lots of folks have noticed, those two have been going at it hammer and tong recently because they're both fighting for the same space. So naturally, he wants to take a shot at former Governor Bush. And the other point he wants to make here is that it's a wide-open race. I think he wants to make sure everyone understands that he's still around, that regardless of what happens in South Carolina, it's not a three-person race. It's not a race between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, that there's another candidate who may not be as well known nationally yet, but he's still in the race, and he wants to remind everyone he's still around.
Charlie Matisian, who is the politics editor for Politico, thank you very much for being with us on a busy evening, and we'll look for your work online at politico.com. We appreciate your time and perspective tonight.
Thank you, Steve.
And we're going to continue for a couple of minutes to hear from you, to get your reaction to the results. We are keeping an eye on the scene in Greenville, South Carolina, where Dr. Ben Carson, we're told, is expected to speak momentarily. But in the meantime, John, Fayetteville, North Carolina, Democrats Line, good evening.
Yes, good evening. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I'm somewhat disappointed. This year was one of the first years that I've really become...
Okay, let's take a break from C-SPAN momentarily. Doesn't look like a lively night on either the callers or the chat, so I may end the show at about an hour into it, but we'll see how that goes. Just to recap the results so far, with almost 29% in of the precincts, Donald Trump 34%, Ted Cruz 22.2%, Marco Rubio 21.3%. Very tight battle for second place. You're going to see a lot of analysis of that in the coming few days. Jeb Bush and John Kasich running very close together for the number three and four spots. Jeb Bush 8.3%, John Kasich 7.6%, and Ben Carson at 6.6% is coming in last, number six. And I imagine there's going to be some pressure for at least two of these guys to drop out, depending on what the ultimate pecking order is going to be. On the Democratic race, Hillary and Bernie Sanders, Hillary won a narrow victory in the Nevada caucus, edging, I think she won slightly over 52% of the caucus tally, and Sanders had 47-point-something%. And I thought there was an interesting analysis by Dick Morris, who I'm going to play that now, who pointed out how absolutely critical it was for Hillary to get a win tonight. And she did get a win. But even though she got a win, a lot of her problems are very visible because, you know, in reading the analysis and the commentary, it looks like the win was largely the result of the Nevada political machine, which is very powerful, allied to Harry Reid, and very ruthlessly pragmatic in terms of making its influence known behind what they perceive to be a winner. And they're not afraid of trampling over popular sentiment in order to shove a candidate down the voters' throats. And among the caucus goers, I mean, Hillary, she did well with older voters, especially older women voters, but she is not doing well with younger voters. And in a general election, that's a problem because the young votes, the younger voters, were absolutely critical to Obama's coalition. And if that segment of it is alienated and stays home, the Democratic ticket is going to have some trouble. So let's. I'm going to play Dick Morris. Then I'm going to check chat and phones, and then we'll go back to C-SPAN. I think Ben Carson is supposed to be giving a concession speech soon. Oh, I think he's there. So let's see what he has to say.
That consists of the Washington establishment and the news media and the pundits, and they believe that they have complete control of our country. They only have complete control if we give them complete control. It is we the people who really have the power. The problem is, if we don't exercise the power, then they continue to have the control. And this is a message that I'm going to be taking across the nation to try to help the people of America recognize that we still have the ability to dictate the course of our country. We still have the ability.
Okay, problems with the audio feed. See if I can get it back. Always a problem relying on live feeds. And more feed coming up, hopefully. Shockwave crashes just about once an hour. It is so frustrating. Let's see if we can get it back. It's just not cooperating. It seems to have crashed across the board. Okay, well, anyway, while we try to resolve that problem, let's go over the count again. 35% of the precincts in, Donald Trump 33%, Ted Cruz 22%, Marco Rubio almost 22%, Jeb Bush 8%, Kasich 8%, just a few percentage points behind them, and Ben Carson at 6.5%. There's really not that much difference between Carson, Kasich, and Bush. There's just 4,000 votes between Carson and Kasich, and 900 votes between Kasich and Bush. So the bottom rung is pretty evenly spaced out, and that's kind of interesting because, obviously a clearer choice will happen if somebody drops out, but who is that somebody going to be when the candidates are so close to each other? Here he is back.
This is the kind of thing that is not known by the American people. And that's why our founders were so insistent upon a good education and a well-informed populace. They said, if we ever become anything other than a well-informed populace, the nature of the country will change because people would be easily manipulated. Well, this is exactly what's going on in our country today. People are being easily manipulated and told what they're supposed to think and who they're supposed to follow, when in fact we have these tremendous brains and with these enormous frontal lobes. Have you ever stopped to imagine why the human being has these big frontal lobes? Because that's where you engage in rational thought processing. That's where you are able to extract information from the past and the present, analyze it, and project it into the future with rational thought processing and rational plans. Now, you don't need those big frontal lobes if all you're going to do is listen to the pundits and have other people tell you what you're supposed to do. You know, you could train some other thing to do that. Okay? You don't need this that we have in order to do that. And that's something that I think we're going to have to begin to emphasize to people. We also need to understand the situation in terms of our educational deficit. We have an all-voluntary military right now. We depend upon the populace to volunteer. Between the ages of 17 and 24.
I was going to recognize the caller, and the caller left before I had a chance to get to them. I apologize for that. I'm having some problems with my switchboard tonight. It's not very responsive. Carson does not sound like a man who is about ready to drop out of a race. I'm going to go back to covering him and see what else he has to say. But this is not a swan song speech he's giving.
Everybody gets a gold star. I mean, this is killing us. We've got to get away from this progressivism and this political correctness and this stupidity, because we have very traditionally very smart and innovative people, and we have to start finding a way to develop them, recognizing that we only have 330 million people, and we have to compete with China with 1.4 billion, India with 1.1 billion. We cannot afford people. We have to develop every single one of them. And we can't have 20-plus percent of people entering high school and not graduating. We cannot have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prison inmates. We have got to develop all of those young people. For every one of those people that we keep from going down that path of self-destruction, that's one less person that we have to be afraid of or protect our families from or pay for in the penal system or the welfare system. One more tax-paying member of society who may discover the cure for cancer or a new energy source. We cannot afford to waste any of our people. It is absolutely essential. And we must begin to really understand what true compassion is all about. True compassion is not keeping people in a dependent position. True compassion is providing a ladder of opportunity so that people can climb out of dependency and become part of the fabric of America. And that's That is really what conservatism is all about. And we must stop allowing the progressives to paint us as people who don't care about the other people in our society. That is absolutely the opposite. They're the ones who don't care. I think they are the ones who keep people enslaved so that they can cultivate their votes. And that is just the opposite of compassion. And I think we're just going to have to come out and tell it like it is. They're not going to like it very much, but we're just going to have to begin to put it in their face, because they're always putting it in our face. And I think we most definitely have to reject political correctness and not allow them to tell us who we can, what we can do. And most importantly, you know, when we say the Pledge of Allegiance to this flag, we say we are one nation under God. We must not allow the secular progressives to remove God from our lives. We cannot do that. And that is a war that I am very willing to fight until the last breath in my body, because I believe that the reason that this nation rose to the pinnacle of the world in record time is because we paid homage to God. And we also recognize that there were values and principles that were worth preserving. And we recognize that there was such a thing as right and such a thing as wrong. And we must get back to a point in this country where we recognize that we do have a culture, an American culture, an American way, not a Republican way, not a Democrat way, but an American way. This is what we must come to understand. And we have to stop fighting each other. You know, what we really need to do is we have to start sitting down and having rational conversations about our differences. And when you have a rational conversation, very often, if one side or the other side is wrong, it becomes apparent. So, for instance, you sit down and have a rational conversation about free college tuition for everybody. Okay? And, you know, the rational side will say, who's going to pay for it? The irrational side will say, well, we have a lot of rich people, and we can just take the money from them. And then the rational side will say, what makes you think they're just going to fork their money over to you? And then the irrational side will say, we'll make them do it. Which side do you think will win? And what we have to do is help the populace to understand that when somebody comes along promising you pie in the sky, this is just a technique to get elected. And when they promote class warfare, they know good and well that if they could take the evil 1% and ship them away someplace, ship them to another country who would be glad to have them, that would not solve their problem, because everybody else could just sit around the campfire and sing Kumbaya, because there wouldn't be anything else left, because the people who are creating everything would be gone. You know, we need to get away from this whole class warfare stuff. What we really need to be thinking about.
Dr. Ben Carson in South Carolina, Greenville, South Carolina. We're going to leave the coverage there to take you to Columbia, South Carolina, and Jeb Bush, who came in a distant fourth in the South Carolina Republican primary.
This is going to be short and sweet. To those who helped Jeb Bush and worked so hard on his behalf, in South Carolina and throughout the country. Thank you very, very much. To Jeb Bush and his family, thank you for running a race for the presidency that we could all be proud of. Thank you, Jeb, for being one of the most decent, thoughtful men I've ever met. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend for life, Jeb Bush.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Lindsay. When I began this journey in Miami, I committed that I would campaign as I would serve, going everywhere, speaking to everyone, keeping my word, facing the issues without flinching, and staying true to what I believe. For the better part of a year, I've endeavored to do just exactly that. I have put forth a vision for America that includes all, because our country deserves a president for everyone. The presidency is bigger than any one person, and is certainly bigger than any candidate. This is not, we're different
served
in our country because
going everywhere,
our head of state is not above us, but because the head of state, the people that aspire to the presidency, are part of the people. In a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, America that includes all, because our country deserves a president for everyone. The presidency is bigger than any one person, and is certainly bigger than any candidate. This is not, we're different in our country because our head of state is not above us, but because the head of state, the people that aspire to the presidency, are part of the people. In a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, we elect a president like us, imperfect under God's watchful eye. I've had a front row seat to this office for most of my adult life. I've seen fallible men rise up to the challenges of our time with humility and clarity of purpose to make our nation safer, stronger, and freer. I firmly believe the American people must entrust this office to someone who understands that whoever holds it is a servant, not the master. Someone who will commit to that service with honor and decency. Our next president will lead an extraordinary country whose people have always made the improbable possible, in big ways and small. Every day, Americans test the boundaries of freedom and achieve more than what they could have ever dreamed. But over the last 7 years, our nation's bright light has become little more than a flicker. We have retreated from the world stage. The American values that have brought peace and opportunity are fading. That is not the America we know and love. America is a country that thinks big, acts boldly, and leads without apology. It will be up to the next president to restore that kind of leadership. I'm proud of the campaign that we've run to unify our country and to advocate conservative solutions that would give more Americans the opportunity to rise up and reach their God-given potential. But the people of Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina have spoken, and I really respect their decision. So tonight, I am suspending my campaign.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, man. I congratulate my competitors that are remaining on the island on their success for a race that has been hard fought, just as the contest for the presidency should be, because it is a tough job. In this campaign, I have stood my ground, refusing to bend to the political winds. We put forward detailed, innovative, conservative plans to address the mounting challenges that we face, because despite what you might have heard, ideas matter, policy matters. And I truly hope that these ideas that we've laid out will serve as a blueprint for a generation of conservative leaders at every level of government so that we can take back our country. We laid out plans on everything from reforming our tax and regulatory system to reviving our economy to rebuilding our military and to fixing the VA once and for all. Finally, I am so grateful to Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina here for his steadfast support. Amazing humor. He stole the line that I'm now saying, which is that he's become a friend for life. I thank all of the Jeb alumni, many of them are here, that have been going door to door all across the country who have put their lives on hold for this cause. And I want to thank my mom and brother who came here to South Carolina. America truly loves them and respects them, and so do I. I want to thank all my family. 2.0 is always back there in the back. And to my dad, who has served as an inspiration to me, he's the greatest man alive. And I want to thank all the volunteers and supporters that I've met along this incredible journey, and to all the fellow grinders in our campaign, our staff, who never, ever, ever gave up. I've had an incredible life, and for me, public service has been the highlight of that life. But no matter what the future holds, here's the greatest safety landing, if you can imagine. Tonight I'm going to sleep with the best friend I have and the love of my life. And I'm totally blessed to be the father of three extraordinary children, and as you might know, four near-perfect grandchildren. And I'll be blessed to say that I'm living in the greatest country the world has ever known. I remain optimistic, and with the right kind of leadership that we all need to work to make sure happens, America's best days are ahead. With strong conservative leadership, Republicans can win the White House, and we can get back to being in the very verge of having the greatest time to be alive. And that's what I honestly believe, and I know you do as well. I look forward to working you to make that dream come true. I will do it as a private citizen, just as you are. Thank you for the opportunity to run for the greatest office on the face of the earth. I love you all. God bless you.
Not really a shock?
Not to many, no. There you have it, folks. Governor Jeb Bush announcing he is suspending his presidential campaign after tonight's South Carolina primary. Of course, we don't get to know.
Well, Jeb Bush just gave a very gracious concession speech announcing he's suspending his campaign. I think a lot of observers would think that, you know, he really couldn't go on denying the reality of what the voters were telling them. Pilgrim is in the chat, and for those who may be listening in the archive, Pilgrim writes on Unified Patriots and is a mine of information regarding election news and statistics, and especially what's going on in Congress and how they vote, and analysis of voting patterns of our Congress people. And he is just remarking about, I always call it the blog that shall not be named, but this primary season has been very divisive, and he was recalling how divisive the 2008 primary season was on the blog that shall not be named, and the various factions that took place there, and a lot of the I forget where they were leaning at the time. I think it was McCain. And they constantly were disparaging Giuliani and Fred Thompson. Anyway, I mean, that was an eye-opener to me because it was the first election in my adult life where I was participating in social media, although, you know, in a small way, still in a small way now. And it was just amazing to see the you know, the divisiveness of what primaries do to blogs. You know, when I got interested in it, when I first, I guess I'll have to name the blog. It was Red State. That was the first blog I ever wrote for or wrote on. And, you know, it was in the, you know, right after the Bush's reelection, and of course the Democrats and the left were making their frontal assault on everything Bush, everything Republican, everything conservative, and above all, everything Iraq. And you know, there was a great spirit of camaraderie and unity as we, you know, we all got together to try to neutralize what we perceived to be the left's online advantage. And then that completely fractured in the aftermath of the congressional defeat in 2006 when we lost Congress, and then the primary season in 2008 in which we got split in so many different directions, and a very bitter primary season, and then of course the ultimate disappointment of the country tilting left under Barack Obama. So, interesting stuff there. Oh, John Kasich is on. Let me put him on.
About 500,000 to the multiple millions of dollars spent by everybody else, and a big chunk of it to hammer.
Folks, if you're just joining us, that's Governor John Kasich addressing supporters after the Republican primary in South Carolina. So let's go live now over to live two. If you want to watch Kasich, you can stay on live stream five. On live two, we're going to go live because it looks like the winner of the South Carolina primary, Donald Trump, is speaking now.
Thank you. Very nicely. He's tough. He's very tough. Tiff
Tiffany, Eric, Laura, and Melania. Melania, say something. Go ahead, please.
Just want to say an amazing place, South Carolina. Congratulations to my husband. He was working very hard, and he loves you. We love you. And we're going ahead to Nevada, and we will see what happens. He would be the best president.
And representing some very, very wonderful children, Ivanka, just say a few words.
Thank you, South Carolina. This is an amazing, amazing night. The momentum since the beginning of this campaign has been unbelievable, and that's because my father's message resonates so deeply with so many people. So as our family, we're incredibly proud. We're incredibly grateful to each of you, so thank you for being here to support us. And I will say this, my father is an incredibly hard worker, and he'll be working for each and every one of you. So together, we'll make America great again.
Thank you very much. So, you know, I was watching upstairs, and it was really amazing to be watching what I was watching. And some of the pundits, and I, you know, overall fair, but not too much, but a number of the pundits said, well, if a couple of the other candidates dropped out, if you add their scores together, it's going to equal Trump. Right? These geniuses, they're geniuses. They don't understand that as people drop out, I'm going to get a lot of those votes also. You don't just add them together. So I think we're going to do very, very well. I want to also congratulate the other candidates. In particular, I have to say, Ted and Marco did a really good job, and they did quite well, as I understand. And, come on, just 1 minute. Come on, 1 second, right? Good. Okay, we go back to war tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning we'll be back. But I just want to congratulate the other candidates. There's nothing easy about running for president, I can tell you. It's tough, it's nasty, it's mean, it's vicious, it's beautiful. When you win, it's beautiful. And we are going to start winning for our country. We're going to start winning. Because our country doesn't win anymore. It doesn't win. We don't win with the military. We can't beat ISIS. We have great military, but we can't beat ISIS. We don't win on trade. China's doing to us, what Japan does to us, what Mexico is just killing us at the border, and with trade. Mexico is killing us. We'll do the wall. Don't worry. We're going to do the wall. We're going to do the wall. And by the way, who's going to pay for the wall? Mexico is going to pay for the wall. And it's very easy. The other politicians come down. You can't get Mexico to pay for the wall. I said, 100%. We have a $58 billion trade deficit with Mexico. The wall is going to cost $10 to $12 billion, okay? Believe me, they will pay. One of the ex-officials from Mexico had a news conference, and he announced that we will not be paying for the wall. Who does Mr. Trump think he is? They came to me, the press, these people. Look at all those cameras back there. The press came to me, and they told me that he said he would not pay for the wall. Do you have a comment? I said, yes. The wall just got 10 feet taller. Really. And I love Mexico. I love Mexico. I love China. I love many of these countries that rip us off because we have leaders that are incompetent and don't know what they're doing. I love these countries. They're great. I have thousands and thousands of Hispanics. We're going to Nevada. I lead with the Hispanics. I'm leading in every poll with the Hispanics. They love me. I love them. The problem is that the leaders of these countries, whether it's Mexico or Japan or Vietnam, which is just doing a big number now all of a sudden, or China in particular, that's the big one. The greatest abuse of a country that I think I've ever seen financially, China. What they've done to us is the greatest single theft in the history of the world. They've taken our jobs. They've taken our money. They've taken everything. We're bringing our jobs back, folks. We're bringing our jobs back. We're going to bring them back. And I know how to do it. We've had so many incredible endorsements. And to me, getting the greatest business people to endorse me is very important. Carl Icahn endorsed me. So many others have endorsed me. And we're going to put these great business people in charge of trade. And when China wants to come and negotiate, they're going to negotiate not with a political hack, which is what they have now. They're going to negotiate with the best business minds in the world. And we have them in this country. So we're going to do a lot of beautiful work. We're going to terminate Obamacare. It's going to be terminated. It's going to be over. It's going to be repealed, and it's going to be replaced, and you're going to have much better health care at a much smaller cost, because Obamacare, if you look at the increases in your Obamacare, 25, 35, 45, even 55%. It's dead. It's not working. We're going to go to a plan that's going to be so much better and so much less expensive. So, Second Amendment, by the way, this is a room, loves the Second Amendment. Thank you, fellas. This is a room, loves and cherishes the Second Amendment. We are going to protect our Second Amendment. Common Core is gone. We are getting rid of Common Core. We're bringing education to a local level. The people in this community, every time I see them, they want education locally. The parents, the teachers, they want to do it. They don't want bureaucrats in Washington telling them how to educate their children. We spend, as a nation, more for education per pupil than any other nation in the world, not even close. More per pupil, second place doesn't even exist. It's so different. And yet, out of 30 countries, we're ranked number 30. You have China, you have Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and then you have number 30, the United States. So we spend the most, and we're at the bottom of the heap. It's not going to happen anymore, folks. Not going to happen anymore. We are going to build our military, which I thank, because a number of the people came down and a number of the pundits in watching tonight. We love our military. We love our military. And by the way, we love our police. Our police are terrific. We love our police. They are not being treated properly. We're going to build our military so big, so good, so strong, so powerful that nobody is ever going to mess with us, folks. And we're going to buy the equipment that our generals, our soldiers, that everybody that's in the know want. We're not buying equipment that sells because they have political people, because they take campaign and they give campaign contributions. We are going to get the equipment that they want, not the equipment that they're told to have by senators and congressmen in Washington. We're going to have great equipment. And the reason I can say that is I'm self-funding my campaign. I'm not getting millions of dollars from all of these. I'm not getting millions of dollars from all of these special interests and lobbyists and donors that once they get it, they literally do whatever the politicians want. That's not going to happen. And we're going to take care of our vets. We love our vets, and they're being treated terribly. We're taking care of our vets. So we're now off to Nevada, and it's a great state. We have great people. We have great people in our nation, no matter where we go. I went to Mobile, Alabama, 35,000 people. We went to Oklahoma recently, twice, 20,000 people, 20,000 people. No matter where we go, we fill up the arenas. Over here the other day, we had a 9,000. We had a 10,000. We have people. The only thing that stops the crowds are the walls, because we can't get them in. We have to send thousands of people away. Time Magazine, last week, did an incredible cover story. They said it It's a movement, and that's what it is. It's an incredible movement with incredible people. Incredible people. Movement with incredible people, I tell you. And whether we go, honestly, whether we go to Dallas or whether we go anywhere you say, you go to LA, you go anywhere you say, our people are incredible. And you know, our theme, what's our theme? You know it, right? Right? Our theme, which I love, maybe the greatest theme of all time, right? And the word again eventually is going to come off. We're going to get rid of the whole theme because what's going to happen, make America great again, right? And the last 2 weeks, because I've gotten to see so many, I guess millions when you add them all up with all of these rooms and all of these speeches, and I've met so many people. But the people are so incredible that I've been saying, make America great again, and it's going to be greater than ever before. That's the kind of potential we have, greater than ever before. So I want to thank everybody. I love you all. Again, South Carolina, we will never forget you. We will never forget you. We will never, ever forget South Carolina. We will never forget our great volunteers. We love our volunteers. We'll never forget all of the people that have helped us so much, my family and folks. Let's go. Let's have a big win in Nevada. Let's have a big win at the SEC. Let's put this thing away, and let's make America great again. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
There you have it, folks. The winner of the Republican primary in South Carolina tonight, Donald Trump.
Okay, well, Donald Trump just gave a very energetic victory speech. I think he has some things to think about, too, I think. Clearly, the candidacy is quite viable. There was some doubt about this state. For him, he did very well there. He did very well despite the debate, the very contentious and controversial debate and some of the rhetoric that he unleashed in that debate, especially concerning the Bush legacy, the Bush family, the whole question of Bush and 9/11, the whole question of Bush and Iraq, and just for clarity's sake, I think he went over the top on 9/11. And on Iraq, that is such a complicated thing I think he is right to point out that the bottom line, given how things ultimately turned out, I don't think anybody, if you were transported back in time but knew everything that would happen between 2003 and 2016, and you would say, okay, decide in 2003 whether to go in, would decide to go in. But that is a very, you know, who has the benefit of that kind of hindsight? Iraq is such a special thing. I thought I might go into that a little bit tonight, but it really is too complicated to do as an add-on to this broadcast. So I'm probably going to do a special one on that just to flesh that out, that whole thing out a little bit. I guess I will say that I'm very interested in watching British politics, and I get a lot of insights from that, which I think can be applied to American politics. During the Iraq War, the Republicans were the ruling party in the United States, for the most part, and the Labor Party in Great Britain was the ruling party in Great Britain. And for both ruling parties, Iraq has been kind of like this long-acting, I don't know what you would call it, disaggregator, I guess. And finally, in the both ruling parties, the legacy of Iraq is resurfacing in unexpected ways. And I'm just going to leave it at that and treat that in a separate broadcast/podcast. Let's see what else is going on. There is some very interesting things in these statistics, because if Bush is out, I'm not sure what Carson and Kasich are doing. Right now, Rubio has a slight lead over Cruz. I think it's reasonable to say, contrary to what Trump just said, that most of Bush's support is going to go to Rubio. I don't see much of it going to Kasich if he stays in the race. And I think Carson just has a small but influential block of supporters, and it's very hard to predict where they're going to go. They are by nature anti-establishment. But I think because of the personalities issues, they may be reluctant to go to Ted Cruz because of especially the legacy of Iowa. But I think temperamentally they wouldn't be very comfortable with Trump. So politics is very interesting. So we will see what we will see. What we will see. Pilgrim asks if Trump knew Bush had dropped out. That's an interesting question. I see Cold Warrior is in the chat. I want to welcome him. And if anybody wants to call in to discuss, you know, their perceptions of tonight or anything else related to the Republican primary, the show is got 17 live minutes left in which you can call in, and we can run it late if people are in a chatty mood. The call-in number is 646-478-0004. That's 646-478-0004. Yeah, I don't know if he knew. I would hope that he didn't know, because I think he should have made some kind of reference to, you know, Bush in his victory speech. But I don't know. Maybe the bad blood is so much that he couldn't bring himself to do it, or maybe he didn't know, or, you know, who knows? Maybe he wasn't briefed well. You just never know what goes on in this kind of high-speed, compressed environment. Well, to go over the results, let's take a look at that again. What's in? Almost 79% in. Trump 32.9, Rubio 22.4, Cruz 21.8. So it does look like Cruz is coming in third, although that's not much of a difference. Bush actually edged out Kasich in this tally, and Carson isn't far behind at the bottom. Bush had 8.2%, Kasich 7.9%, Carson 6.9%. So very interesting stuff. The battle for number two and three, that is a very interesting point, as Cold Warrior who entered just makes, because it does seem that I don't recall the battle for second or third place being so focused on by the media in previous year's primaries. They seem to read a lot into it. And, you know, maybe there's a certain logic in that, because you still have a 4 or 5 man race. You know, it's the question, you know, it's the old musical chairs analogy, who gets to pick up the pieces. So it looks like Oh, they're comparing. They're looking at the exit polls, and that's going to be kind of interesting. The reconciliation of the exit polls to the actual results. I mean, the polling profession has been really taking a beating this year, because as they did in 2012, because they just get a lot of things wrong. Okay, well, I'm going to go back. I think the live stream is carrying some commentary from ABC, so I'm going to go back there, and I'll keep an eye on the switchboard in case anybody calls in.
Oh, this is not perceived to be telling it like
right.
it is.
That's a great question. We know about his shifting on immigration. That's right.
The other thing to point out at this point is I believe he might be taking the stage soon in South Carolina. You can see he is right now.
That's
if you want to watch that speech, we're good like that. And go. No, he's over there on live stream 3 if you want to watch that speech that Senator Marco Rubio addressing supporters in South Carolina. And again, we want to point out we don't even yet know how he's going to finish. We know it's a tight race for second place between him and Senator Ted Cruz.
Yeah, and that battle is important because, of course, they both want to be the Trump alternative. Ultimately, whatever happens in South Carolina, they're going to fight on to the next stage. But they want to show, you know, Rubio, we talk a lot about how much potential he has. It feels to me like that prospect that...
are the strongest military in the world.
We're going to cut over to Rubio.
We as a nation have faced troubling times before. In fact, 36 years ago, this nation faced a period of doubt. After a failed presidency, it felt like America was in decline, our economy was stagnant, and the American dream felt like it was slipping away. And then we elected a president that inspired us. A president who asked us to remember who we were and who believed, as we do, that America's greatest days always lie ahead. Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan made us believe that it was morning in America again, and it was. Well, now the children of the Reagan Revolution are ready to assume the mantle of leadership. Those of us who grew up when it was morning in America and Ronald Reagan was in the White House are ready to do for our generation, are ready to do for the next generation what Ronald Reagan did for ours. And who is this conservative movement in the 21st century? Because our principles remain the same. But who are we? My friends, the 21st century conservatives are the son of a single mother who grew up in poverty and was almost lost. And today he serves this state as its junior senator, Tim Scott. The 21st century conservative movement is the daughter of immigrants from India who wanted desperately for their children to have all the opportunities they never did, who faced a string of prejudice, and yet because of the greatness of our country today, Nikki Haley is the governor of a state where it's always a great day. And the 21st century conservative movement is the son of a bartender and a maid from Cuba, who tonight stands one step closer to being the 45th president of the United States of America. We are a nation and a people that celebrate success, We are a nation that admire people that have worked hard and moved ahead. And as conservatives, we will always celebrate success. But we fight for those who are still trying to make it. If tonight you are that single mother who has made it the purpose of your life to leave your children better off than yourself, in the 21st century, we conservatives will fight for you. If you are watching tonight, and you are that father that works two jobs so that your kids could have all the chances you never did, in the 21st century, we conservatives will fight for you. If you're the 17-year-old high school student who wants a big future, and so you get up well before dawn to take two buses to a better school halfway across town, who gets home late at night to do homework because you know that God has made you for more than what people around you tell you you are made for, in the 21st century, we conservatives will fight for you. We will fight for you because we come from where you are now, because we live the way you live now. And we know that limited government and free enterprise and a strong national defense is a better way forward for you, for me, for us, and for the United States of America. Tonight, to those watching at home, I ask you to join us in this effort. This has been a long road. There were many people on this campaign when it first started, many good people, many of whom in any other year would have been a front runner. But now, practically speaking, it's down to three. And I know that our campaign gives us the best chance not just to come together, not just to unify our party, but to unify our country and to grow this movement. I ask you to go on our website. If you're watching tonight, I ask you to go on our website right now, MarcoRubio.com, and join our campaign. Yeah! 60 years ago, a young couple from Cuba came to America in search of a new beginning, a second chance, a fresh start. And America changed their lives. Of course, I'm talking about my parents. Ten days ago, their son arrived in South Carolina after a difficult election in New Hampshire in search of a new beginning and a fresh start. And many thought it was over. Some had doubts about whether we would wind up here even now. For me, the state of South Carolina will always be the place of new beginnings and fresh starts. God's hand is on everything. And so whatever God's will is in this election is what will ultimately happen to us and to our country. But if it is God's will that I should serve as the 45th president, if it is God's will that we should win this election, then history will say that on this night in South Carolina, we took the first step forwards in the beginning of a new American century. Thank you, South Carolina. Thank you. God bless you.
Florida Senator Marco Rubio with his wife, his four children, Governor Nikki Haley, who endorsed him this past week in Chapin.
Okay. Well, Marco Rubio gave a very energetic kind of speech, not exactly a concession speech, more like a let's move on to the next contest kind of speech, you know, with the kind of the energy that he typically has. And of course, the last shot of him on television was him and Governor Nikki Haley, who played a very big role in this primary in bolstering his chances. So there is definitely a political alliance there. Looking at the count, there is still just a half a percentage point, well, 6/10 of a percentage point, separating Rubio and Cruz. That is, practically speaking, just 3,000 votes. So beware of the commentary that you are going to read, because 3,000 votes is not a lot of votes, and that is what separates Rubio and Cruz. Rubio currently number two, Cruz currently number three, and the media will make a great deal, just like they did in Iowa, about who had the second place finish. And it looks like Rubio benefited from being third in Iowa. They made a big thing out of him, and I suspect they will make a big thing out of his number two finish in South Carolina. The live show only has 2 minutes to run, so I don't think I'll extend it. Nobody has called in. I'll keep the chat open. Guys, if you want to stay in the chat and just comment, just let me know what you want to do. But I think what I will do right now is to play my customary exit song and just encourage people to continue voting your convictions. Don't let yourself get talked out of it. And we'll be back with another show in a week or two.